Hello, everybody. This is Mr. Fox of the I Refuse podcast. Almost made it a week since the last full episode of the podcast without any new episodes. But of course, you know, I have to go on the internet and get caught up in Twitter and get caught up in the news and, you know, I just had to get on here and discuss the legacy of Alicia Moore, aka Pink, because she is being honored at this year's Billboard Awards with the Icon Award. And it's in that very moment that I saw the news come out today that I just reminisced the past 20-something years of being a super fan of hers. And I wanted to celebrate her career and her legacy and her as a person and as a musician and as an artist for a myriad of reasons. First and foremost, when I think of Pink, I think of somebody that not only came out at the height of, like, mid-21st century pop music, but sounded very soulful and stood out between, you know, the boy bands and Britney Spears, but held her own in the vein of a Mary J. Blige, Destiny's Child, Faith Evans, so to speak. And a lot of people that are familiar with Pink the last 10, maybe 15 years are not too familiar with her debut album, or they don't make the connection. I think a lot of people think, oh, well, she's just this rock pop chick and she's always been that way. But one thing that has made Pink stand out and last as long as she's had for so long is that she is essentially a modern day artistic chameleon. You know, aside from that, she did not come up in a Disney World, Mickey Mouse Club. She didn't come up as like a child actress, a child performer that got on a major label and had this huge machine behind her. Alicia Moore comes from Northeast Pennsylvania, on the outskirts of Philadelphia, like the whitest of white, right? She, in her teenage years, she walks into a Philadelphia open mic spot. I think it was East Philadelphia open mic spot. Gets on stage and performs Real Love by Mary J. Blige. And I know this because it was part of her, I believe, either Behind the Music or VH1's Driven. And I'm just dating myself. So this white girl from Pennsylvania walks into a predominantly all-black spot, evening bar spot, gets on the mic, and not only sings Real Love by Mary J. Blige, but kills it. Number one. Number two, she becomes part of a girl group, don't remember the name, and they do a demo, and the demo ends up at LaFace Records. specifically at the receptionist desk, or the assistant desk to L.A. Reid's. The assistant's playing the demo in the radio, and he happens to walk down the hallway, L.A. Reid, and overhears his demo tape. Brings in all three girls. At some point, it becomes very obvious that Pink is the standout. They offer her a solo deal, and she takes it. Now, this is like the mid to late 90s. Around that time, Backstreet Boys was really big, NSYNC was really big, Britney Spears was huge, Christina Aguilera was right around the corner, about to drop her album. Destiny's Child had just dropped their album. TLC made a comeback. Like, 1999 was huge. Now, another great thing about Pink is that she's going to do what's true to her. She's going to say what she wants to say, act how she wants to act, stay true to herself. The compromise she made, though, at the front end of her career was she made an album that the label made her do. Now, for those of you that don't know, Alicia Moore, Pink, same person, was essentially like she still is a tomboy, but like a skater, tomboyish kind of girl that was into like rock music and all that shit. So she does the first album, and it's essentially another album in a long line of Kevin Shakespeare, Candy Bears, Tiny, Coddle, like, you know, when you look at, like, Fan Mail by TLC, Destiny's Child's Writing on the Wall, you look at stuff that came out from Dream and Backstreet Boys' second album, NSYNC's first album, or second album, Britney Spears, it's in that same vein. But what set Pink apart from the other acts is that her voice was very soulful, right? Not only could she sing, but Mama could throw down. So, you know, the first album comes out, first single, There You Go, comes out, a bop out the gate. Most Girls is another single that comes out. Another bop. Now, what makes that album so important is that it didn't sound like anything else. You know, there were a lot of groups out at the time. Pink came out as a solo artist, even though she had some of the same big name writers and producers. It was a combination of two flavors and two styles. And also, Pink didn't come across as something that was manufactured. You know, in interviews and performance, she was very much who she is. But she was also immensely talented. For someone that was outside of the machine and outside of pop princess land and still hold her own and still sell very well and have an amazing voice out the gate, that's pretty amazing. Although she didn't get the same level of acclaim or recognition as did Britney Spears with her first album, or Christina Aguilera with her Grammy win for Best New Artist, or the sales of the Backstreet Boys or NSYNC. That pretty much just boils down to label politics. Pink was on LaFace, which was a subsidiary or in business with Arista at the time. The Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, and Britney Spears, I believe, were all on Jive. I believe Christina Aguilera was on RCA. Bigger labels, more marketing, big machine behind all those acts. It's just the lay of the land. But another great thing about Pink is that she's just an all-around badass. When time came to do a remake of Lady Marmalade, Pink, Maya, Christina Aguilera, and I believe Lil' Kim and Missy Elliott were having a meeting with Ron Fair, who was essentially or solely responsible for bringing Christina Aguilera to the label at the time. And there was a lot of discussion around who was going to sing the high parts. The high parts that lead to the bridge, and I believe the final section at the end of the song. Now, me being a Virgo, it's very easy for us, because, you know, Pink is a Virgo as well, so that's why I say we. It's very easy for us to pick up in the room that a lot of people would rather much go along to get along. And we believe in ourselves enough to say, hey, you know, she's not going to be the one, or he's not going to be the one to do that by himself. We're all going to do it. So the conversation around the high parts, Ron Fair said to the people in attendance that Christina Aguilera was going to be the one to do the high parts in the song. Pink spoke up and said, no, we all are. And that's that. Well, I mean, we all know the end result of that. They all ended up singing the high part. And in my honest opinion, Pink ate Christina Aguilera up on that song. It wasn't so much singing high or loud or shrieking. It's more about what you do with the song and the notes and leaving your signature on a song. Since that song has been out, Pink's performance is my favorite part of the song. And that's me not even being biased. Although Maya is my girl because she's from down the street, she doesn't really, she kind of gets left in the dust by Pink and Christina Aguilera. Like, the last 5 or 10 years, I almost forgot that she was on the song. Love Lil' Kim, she ate it up too. I'm glad that they put her on the song just to, you know, in my opinion, solidify her legacy as the queen of rap. But Pink ate Christina Aguilera up on that song. It was essentially the two of them. It was more so a duet than a group effort. They were going back and forth in the verses of the song. They were vocalizing, doing the runs. Pink's runs are smoother, more solid. There is no sense of strain in her vocals, still to this day. So yeah, like, Pink definitely ate Christina Aguilera up on the remake of Lady Marmalade. But nevertheless, all four women won Grammys. Huge deal for a multitude of reasons. Nevertheless, you know, Pink's career continued. She did her sophomore album, Misunderstood, amazing. Aside from the singles that were released, there are some very deep cuts on that album that stick like grits still to this day. And what makes that album so significant, aside from the fact that she avoided sophomore slump in a major way, was that a lot of the material on that album she not only co-wrote, but the songs and the lyrics are pages from her own life story. Growing up as the child of a domineering father and an even more domineering mother that divorced when her and her brother were young, her views on her mother, her views on her father, the dynamic between her and her mother, her father's influence on her growing up. Amazing album. She brought in Linda Perry to do some of the big songs, but it was definitely Pink through and through. The second album and each album after that was in stark contrast to the debut album, Can't Take Me Home. And, you know, at the time, a lot of Black fans, a lot of people that took to her R&B debut, which wasn't all R&B, could had an issue or felt like she was selling out when her second album came out, not realizing that she wasn't promoted in a way that implied that she was going to do R&B her whole career, or that she was going to be in this box of this flash in the pan style that, you know, TLC was doing for the moment, Destiny's Child was doing for the moment. Like, all of those acts took up a different flavor and different style by the time their next album came out. But a lot of people felt some kind of way, you know, when she went from the first to the second album, and it was a totally different look, style, and genre of music. And it's interesting to me that, you know, and this kind of goes towards, like, stands and stand bases and shit like that, is that people were, you know, I understand that a lot of people are very protective and very sensitive to R&B music and soul music, and how, you know, cultural appropriation and musical appropriation historically has been a long-standing issue in pop culture. You know, when you think back to how Black artists of the 40s and 50s and 60s would originate recordings and pieces of music that would only chart so high on the charts, but a white artist that's hugely popular, Elvis Presley, would do remakes of the same song, and it not only would chart higher, but his manager at the time would essentially strong arm the publishing rights and the, or attempt to strong arm the songwriting credits and try to make it seem like Elvis wrote it, or he and Elvis wrote it, or he wrote it solely. Essentially, like, acting as if the original recording or the original artist never existed. Prime example, Hound Dog, Big Mama Thornton. Originated the recording, amazing original composition. Elvis Presley does a remake of Hound Dog. Shit charts higher, sticks like grits. White America's all over it. And it's a script that never changes, although the cast may change. And I get it. However, Pink never asked for it. LaFace put her up to it. Anybody with two eyes and a brain can see that LaFace is a black owned, or a black owned, or was a black owned label. Owned by, well, at the time, Kenneth Babyface Edmonds and L.A. Reid. The entire roster is black. I mean, at that time, they had Usher, TLC, Toni Braxton, I believe, still, even though she was going through bankruptcy, no tea, no shade. They had Outkast. At one point, that they had Damian Dame. I think they had Motown had the boys, but their entire roster was mostly black, but they had Usher too. And Pink, I believe, was their first and only white artist at that time. So it's just the politics of the game. Black people were in their feelings when that second album came out, and it was all pop, all rock, but it was still Pink. Like, you know, people that are kind of familiar with the recording industry are aware that the first album or the debut album is what the record label wants. And you're essentially just there to do your career their way for the first album, right? Since they're putting all this money and investing all this money into you, and they're taking a risk, they still believe that you're talented, but they want to make sure it's right. So, as badass as Pink is, as much as she believes in herself, as unpolished at the time as she was, her hands are essentially tied, right? So now that the first album, I believe, goes gold or goes platinum, she's arrived. Record label's happy. She has a little bit more creative control in the second album. Since she made them a lot of money and is a name now, you know, the record label backs off a little bit. And she goes in a totally different direction than the first album. And she believes in it. And the album sells, I think, at least 8 million records, right? That's like 7 times more than the first album. So, she's well on her way, right? It's just a prime example of an artist that plays the politics of the game, right? Believes in herself so much. She knows who to call. She writes the lyrics. She spends time crafting it. And the album skyrockets. and she earns more fans. She's still a badass. She still does what she wants, as other people do. And the second album is great. Now, you know, she's not without missteps. I mean, the third album, Try This, fell flat a little bit. One single's released, music video's made. The album really doesn't go anywhere. She kind of falls back for a couple of years. She starts dating, and then she marries that fine-ass husband of hers. But when I think of her career in its totality and what she has amassed and how she's done for herself, how well she's done for herself, performance-wise, vocally, musically, it's an amazing story of someone that doesn't sell huge every album, but maintains this this above middle ground of consistency, of performances, of material that is varied, is very it's very rich, it's very tasteful, it's autobiographical. Like, when you think of the last 15 or so years of music, particularly with female artists, you really can't think of too many that write their own songs, sometimes co-produce, maintains the richness of their voice. Their voice matures, but as time goes on, their voice is just as strong or even stronger than the first couple of years that they've been doing this. And she's been able to maintain relevancy well past the age of early 2000s boy band and girl band and pop band music, the flash in the pan, summer music, what's hot. You know, a lot of acts have come and gone, but she's still recording music and releasing albums. She just released one, I believe, last year. I did pretty well. It's hard to think of a female solo artist from day one that has continued to release music and sell. You know, while Britney Spears is essentially Pink's contemporary as far as number of albums and longevity and hits and singles and deep cuts and variety as far as sound and look and being a chameleon, you know, Britney Spears, in my opinion, has kind of run out of steam the last 5 or so years, and has kind of been looked at as a case study as to the pitfalls and the dangers of fame and celebrity and being on the pedestal for X amount of years and then just being looked at differently. The great thing about Pink is that throughout the last 15, 20 years, she has maintained a normal, level-headed balance of, this is the music, this is family life. You've never once heard a story about Pink falling out of a nightclub, being drunk, shaving her head bald, ramming umbrellas through passenger windows. You never heard, like, anything dark or tragic or irresponsible when it comes to Pink. She's kept her life pretty private. She's put all of her experiences into her lyrics and her music. And she has been, for the longest time, like a modern day pop artist. And done it in a way, and navigated this journey in a way that is still entertaining and thought-provoking, but true to herself. Like I say, Pink hasn't amassed a great or an exorbitant amount of musical awards. You know, 7, 8, 10, 15, 20 Grammys or nominations or anything. But she is definitely somebody that has hung in there and kept it going and has left a discography a beautiful body of work that elicits memories. I am give or take 5 or so years younger than Pink. So essentially she's played a part in my growing up, from high school to now. A handful of her songs elicit certain memories, from sophomore, junior, senior year of high school to going into the military to living in Pennsylvania to traveling to taking trips, to road trips from the Air Force Base in Texas to the Carlsbad Caverns, which I believe are in New Mexico. Like, the early 2000s, specifically, all the way up until about 2009, 2010, she's done a lot for me musically. Not to mention that Misunderstood album. I saw a lot of myself in my childhood in that album. Especially the song Family Portrait. My mom wasn't married, but household was still dysfunctional as fuck. And there are some songs in the album that make me emotional. And I see a lot of my childhood dysfunction in most of those songs. Definitely the one where she says, "Mama was a lunatic." Hello. I'm sure, there are going to be, the news is going to divide a lot of people. There are a lot of stans, a lot of fans out there that take the word icon seriously. For example, recently on Twitter, there was a follower of mine that posted a tweet regarding Ciara. And it was essentially less than like 10 words. Ciara, an icon? And I get it. Like, when I think of icon, Ciara's not the first person to come to mind. The woman that opened the door for her is Janet Jackson. Oh, more than an icon. By the way, if you want to feel old, and this is pointing to a greater, my larger point of the astounding legacy of Pink. Back in 2001, MTV did an icon evening special, whatever you want to call it, special episode dedicated to Janet Jackson, Aaliyah was the host. Aaliyah was the host. That was an amazing night. Outkast performed while escorting her to her seat. She sat between Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. And Pink was part of the special. It was herself, Usher, and Maya that did like a medley dedication to Janet Jackson. Destiny's Child did a performance dedicated to Janet Jackson. Trying to think who else was part of that. I think it was barely an hour long, but Pink did Rhythm Nation and Miss You Much, which is one of my all-time favorite Janet Jackson songs. Maya did Pleasure and Principle, another one of my favorites. Usher did All Right, which is a cute little bop. But when you want to say performance-wise, Pink ate them up. She did the entire Miss You Much routine. And of course, it segued into Rhythm Nation, where the three of them performed that. But I believe that's floating on YouTube somewhere. But just think about it, though. Like, Pink has been around the same time that Aaliyah existed. Pink has been around the same time that DC3 existed. Usher and Maya were big names. And Three Stacks had a perm. Like, you ever... You're living in the now, right? But do you ever, like, think back or look at, like, footage from, like, 15, 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, and you're like, damn, we really went through some fashions and some hair, and we really were something. But yeah, very dated, but she's been around that long. You know, Pink is not an artist that came out just for the summer, had two singles, and then didn't come back for like another 5 or 6 years. She has released 9 albums in 20 years without needing to go independent, without having to switch numerous labels. You know, LaFace, I believe, has been defunct, and I think Pink has been on RCA the last 3 or 4 albums. That's the exception, but she never faded out. She never became non-existent. And she continued recording music well after Greatest Hits album. Like, when's the last time that was done? You know, like I said, fans may be divided on the whole icon thing. You know, she doesn't have, like, 18 number ones. She doesn't have, like, 6 diamond selling albums or anything. But she's definitely someone that has maintained a collection, a body of work that is not of the manufactured, polished, pop, big machine supported universe, but has maintained the steady lane and avenue of her own that is just as rich, just as diverse, and still sticks like grits. Like, I'm not gonna lie, me personally, I resonate with all of her eras. Having grown up, I am a child of the 80s. having grown up in the new wave synth alternative indie rock music of the 80s, early 90s, and the pop music through both decades, but also loving R&B and soul music as well. Like, I'm not gonna lie, of her 8 or 9 albums, I'm Not Dead Yet, Funhouse, the Truth About Love album, Can't Take Me Home, of course, Misunderstood, of course. So those 4 or 5 albums are close to my heart for various reasons. And it's the woman is just amazing. And, you know, her Funhouse era, like, she really set a standard and set the bar high. You know, it wasn't about, you know, doing synchronized hand movements and foot movements and swaying from left to right on the stage. And, you know, she actually took her performance to the sky. And she did that throughout the Funhouse tour and any performance during the life of that album. And I was just, like, amazed. She did all the acrobatic shit suspended in the sky while singing live. Superhuman shit. Superhuman, badass women, like, amazing. You know, I know that a lot of people, when they think of great entertainers of the last 15, 20 years, specifically women, or just in general, you know, Beyonce is the first one to come to mind. But Pink is definitely up there on her own as someone that is a great entertainer. She may not be on the forefront of everybody's minds because she's not in the forefront all the time. We all know that Beyonce hasn't sat down since 1990. It's neither here nor there. But Pink definitely gives you a run for your money and gives you your money's worth. I mean, when you think of vocals, you know, there aren't many contraltos that come to mind that are mainstream. Pink is one of those. You know, mainstream pop is essentially made up of mezzo sopranos or sopranos, and at the very least, altos. But Pink, another feather in her cap of being an individual, is that she has a more huskier, deeper, sonically rich timbre to her vocals, to her range. And it's definitely a vocal range when that word first comes to your mind, that goes against the grain of what, you know, the impression that a contralto gives people. Pop music is not the first thing that comes to your mind when you think of that range. It's, when you think of that range, it's something more along the lines of like a jazz or a blues. And what's amazing about Pink is that it's a stark contrast between the voice and the look, right? And not only that, she does a lot with her range. And she never goes out of key, out of pitch, out of tone, whether standing there barefoot or spinning in the air 25,000 times. So there really, you know, isn't any better choice, any other choice. She is indeed an icon. I definitely believe that she influenced, like, the Lords and the Adeles and the Ariana Grandes and the Taylor Swifts to a degree that are out now, that they either write their own lyrics and their own music, or they don't look like the cookie cutter type, but their voice blows you away nonetheless. And when it comes down to the music and the sound, you know, no two albums are alike, no two eras of the career are alike, and she's very much true and straight up with you. And that's hard. That's not easy to come by, you know, in an industry where you have so many handlers and you have all these people telling you what to say, how to say it, what you can answer, what not to answer. And I get it. And Pink is a great example, a glowing example on how to have a long career without sacrificing the core of who you are. And on that note, this is Mr. Fox of the I Refuse podcast, and this is The Legacy of Pink. Be sure to subscribe and follow us. We are on Twitter and Instagram. We also have a blog, a WordPress blog, the I Refuse podcast to WordPress blog. We also started a Patreon. There's no content on that yet, but there is a poll. It is the I Refuse podcast. It's launched over the weekend, this past weekend. Be sure to bring all your attention to that. On Instagram, we are at @I_refuse_podcast. On Twitter, it's I Refuse Podcast, all one word. And you can find us on 8 streaming platforms. If you go to our profile on Twitter, there's a Linktree link. If you go to our Instagram, the same link is there as well, which takes you to other links to the streaming platforms and the blog. Once again, this is Mr. Fox of the I Refuse podcast, and we will catch you later.